brilliant go for it film that not only portrays but engages with, which is what I like in particular, because it doesn't just like look at Russell Brand or absorb him, but it kind of gets into and mirrors and embraces the energy that he puts out, which I thought was great. And that's your sense of engagement, and that's why you're a good filmmaker. But it matches his temperament on some level. A wonderful timing and the cutting of it, and the worshipped the beginning, the meditative thing about, you know, who am I, where am I going, that kind of, it's just brilliant. I mean, it's really, really exceptional. And the graphics and the I love the superb ending. Everything is, it's really dynamic, and it really is a really powerful, uplifting thing. Because it's...
Yeah, that's what I hope, Jeff. I really was attracted to the story because I felt like through Russell's life story, we could look at transformation and we could look at consumer culture. We could look at it from not a pedantic standpoint, but from a really intimate and personal standpoint, because he's somebody who took all of this to the hilt. And that was the thing about your comments that I wanted to talk to you about, was the reason why I think that part of the film is important. Is not because I think it's fascinating that he was fascinating or that he should be lauded for, you know, his rise to fame or his drug addiction or his sex addiction or celebrated for that. Yeah. Because I think it's very vital foundation-building stuff to look at a person who took all of the things that were sold will make us happy to the hilt. You know, I don't know anybody really who went to quite that extreme with the things, you know, money, sex, drugs, power, you know, took it all, went, you know, married biggest pop star in the world.
Yeah.
It goes on and on. And then, oh my gosh, I'm not happy. Where's that feeling of euphoria I'm supposed to have, right?
Yeah.
I live in the big house. And I felt like then that's the setup, right, for what is to come, because there's a lot of Hollywood stars that do a lot of really incredible charitable work, but they don't just up and leave. And that wasn't something I anticipated would happen. I had no idea that when he went on the Messiah Complex tour, he would leave never to come back. You know, I mean, he bought that house and has never stepped foot in it a day in his life.
Wait a minute. Let's slow down for the sake of those who have not attended a Messiah Complex concert or you know, of course, seen the film. I didn't know about what you're talking about him leaving. What, he left the Messiah Complex tour, he abandoned it, you're saying?
No, he left for that tour and never came back to L.A.
Oh, right. Okay, fine.
I even didn't include in the film, but I have an interview with his housekeeper crying on camera that he was supposed to be back in 3 months, and he never came back, and she misses him, and where is he? And he was like a son to her. Kind of thing.
So when did he
just
physically
never back?
When was he physically living in Los Angeles?
He was living in LA when he approached me to make this movie. Let's see, that was 2 years ago. So he was here 2 years ago, and then he left on the tour. Let me think. We shot that Tahoe scene. That was the first date of the tour, that private jet thing.
Right.
That was July.
Of 13?
Of 2013.
Okay.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. I'll just, for those who have been, you know, catching his films, who caught him in Get Him to the Greek, which is my favorite of his film roles, and of course...
Me too. I love that one.
Yeah, Forgetting Sarah Marshall and Arthur and everything. That was like one Russell Brand, and your film basically... Correct me, roughly spends about half its running time on the former Russell Brand, and then using the metaphor of transcendence and growth and kind of moving into and up being another person, it then focuses on the guy who sort of became really interesting to me, anyway, personally, when I saw him on MSNBC do that wonderful, he took over the interview and made, you know, made comments about the MSNBC folks not being particularly hip and
I mean,
all that.
Great,
you know. And then the tour. So it's like there's two Russell Brands. I've never been particularly interested or engaged with the narcissistic, you know, excessive lifestyle guy, but I became really engaged with him when he became the other guy, the second version. Is that more or less accurate?
Yeah, absolutely.
Is it half and half?
And you know what's funny is some people have the opposite response. they want to know more about the early days and how did he rise to fame and all this. And I'm with you. I mean, I'm much more interested in some of the questions around what's really behind what he's doing now and how that ties in with the Messiah Complex.
Right.
Tour and fodder, and right. Also in the audience becoming inspired and activated on their own about whether or not they can actually do something in the world. Because I feel like I hope that audiences will leave and consider an internal switch themselves, even if it's just a fraction of the extreme. I like hyperbolic characters, as you know.
Yeah.
People who take things off the charts.
Right.
And I think maybe it's just because I hope that it'll push us just a little bit, you know, watching them to break the rules and break the mold and step out of line.
May I ask?
Those are the things I like to get people to think about and
right.
and to question. And I also think there's interesting questions about, you know, fleeting pop fame that we see in the early part of the film and
right.
then, you know, a more lasting, transcendent meaning to one's life that one can have if one chooses to. And that's something that is a very unique choice that Russell's made. You don't see Hollywood celebrities pop out and, like, leave, do you? I don't know of many.
As a rule, you do not.
No, so that's why it's fascinating, too, I think. And you know, all of this stuff happened while I was filming. I mean, when I signed on to this, it was... he was just beginning to write the Messiah Complex, and I thought, okay, I can tell this story, but it's going to have to be about him.
Yeah.
I inherited a film that was a production that was kind of stumbling along, mm-hmm. where he was looking at happiness and sort of his empty reality by interviewing other people. So you see a little bit of that with the Mike Tyson, David Lynch, and Oliver Stone, but there were hundreds, thousands of hours of footage. It became thousands of hours, certainly, when we started filming. We filmed like a whole new film, but you know, that I inherited when I took on the project. It was originally I was going to fix that other thing, but then I thought, I don't think this is going to be a good film, because this person, this really charismatic, really intelligent, raw character,
yeah.
is not in that other film. He's just interviewing people, and he's by far the most interesting person in the room. So now,
why do you think he came to you?
Will Russell agree that the film needs to be about him?
Why do you think he came to you, Andy?
Will he open up, and will he give me creative control? Those were the humps we had to get over before
right.
I could take on the project. So
why do you believe why did he come to you at that particular time? Because he sensed that he was going through a big convulsive change, and he wanted it to be communicated,
I really don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, he hadn't created The Truths, he hadn't left on the Messiah Complex tour, the book Revolution was not even something that he hadn't done. Paxman, which inspired the book Revolution
right.
to be written, you know, to explain sort of what happened on Paxman, none of that had happened, none of it. So
okay.
I think it's just, you know, some of these films are bigger than we are, and I've come to realize you just come along, you know, I've been lucky enough in my life to just kind of end up right there at the right time, you know, and that's happened again here. It's not orchestrated, and I don't think that Russell planned it. I think Russell...
What was the idea then?
...to me because he thought he liked my films. He liked
right.
And We Live in Public mostly, and he
yeah.
thought that I would be able to help him get this story told, this story that he... of happiness. And my response was, I don't think I can do it with the existing footage. I need to shoot a new film. And the film's got to be about you, and I'm going to need creative control. And that
right.
he'd never given that up before.
What do you mean,
the camera, why did you...
Yeah.
I asked him, why did you... I didn't include this in the film, but why did you give me creative control? And he said, it's time to let go.
Ah. That's always a good thing.
Not the easiest time doing. I mean, it was definitely a tug of war all along the way, but we got there in the end.
What did you mean about him wanting to initially about portrait of happiness, quote unquote? What does that mean?
He had a production called Happiness that he was making that he was trying, you know, just originally something that was an idea, you know, Oliver Stone and Al Maisels apparently came to him and told, you know, expressed interest as he was rising to fame, I think probably around Forgetting Sarah Marshall, around the VMAs, around that whole incident with the VMAs.
Yeah.
They came to him and said, you know, would you want to make a documentary about you or something? And he said, I want to make a film about, I mean, I wasn't there, so don't quote me, but I think it was like, basically, he decided that a film about becoming, you know, how this Hollywood, you know, happiness thing was a myth.
Uh-huh.
That, like, becoming famous would make you happy was just bullshit. And that, I think he wanted to make a film about that, and then he went around, like, to, like, Angola prison and a meditation center. He just was kind of filming his own seeking of something else because the fame he was having wasn't satisfying to him.
Right.
But I, in looking at the footage, when it came to me as a rough cut, I didn't respond to it. And then they came to me to fix it, and I didn't think I could. I didn't feel like it was interesting, honestly. And there were interesting people in it, you know, like Mike Tyson and David Lynch. They were in the rough cut, but but Russell wasn't. You know, Russell was really just asking questions and here and there, and just kind of listening to the answer. And there were more. I mean, there was like Cameron Diaz and 50 Cent was filmed for that. You know, there was like a lot of celebrities, and there was amazing footage shot at Angola prison too.
Uh-huh.
But it just didn't have anything, you know. It felt like a survey or something. But it was weird because when I went to the meeting to give notes, because I, you know, I just wanted to pass it on as an artist before I didn't think I was going to actually do the film. I said, you know, well, maybe there's one solid interview that can be done. But I went down there because that's what artists do, right? We kind of like pass it on. If we have a way to kind of figure out how to solve something, we try to work together, you know? So I went down there. And but then Russell was at the meeting, which I didn't expect. And that was when I became upset because the person that was at that meeting was not in that film. You know, the magic, the charisma, the intelligence, the political sort of, just everything about him at that meeting was riveting. And it was, yet the film was just didn't have any of that. You know, and I thought, this is ridiculous. What? How is this, you know? How'd this happen, you know? And then Russell, you know, as his agent says, can own you so fast. He just started pursuing me to go to a stand-up show, and the show I went to was the beginnings of the Messiah Complex, where he was really working on that material. He was working it out. He's workshopping it. He tends to write on stage. So it was like not like the show it is now, but it was I could see a way to tell this story and really look at the difference between being a pop star and being, you know, forever remembered.
Yeah.
Remembered forever for, you know, being Gandhi or something. And that Russell was sort of standing in one world and really wishing to be in the other.
Now, people who
I could tell that story if I could go on the Messiah Complex tour. Right. That's all I knew, Jeffrey. I didn't know anything else would happen, you know?
Right.
I just thought, now I can tell the story, but it's got to be about Russell.
Yeah.
And I need creative control. Those were the two things that I had to go to him. And, you know, it was like dating without dating. Like, we visited with one another. I went over there and filmed sometimes.
Yeah.
He tried to restrict my filming of him on one occasion, so I just didn't go on the plane. You know, we did a toe-to-toe, sort of testing each other's boundaries. And that's how the whole thing went, you know? I mean, we're very... He called me his ninja shadow one time. You know, I mean, his ginger ninja shadow. You know, and I think that's how it was. We're both kind of these, strong characters, personalities. And I would defer to him a lot because he's my subject and out of respect, and I was documenting him. But he was also very uncomfortable to be documented a lot of the time.
Yeah.
It's not something he's comfortable with, believe it or not.
He does say in the film, correct me if I'm wrong.
But you know, there's about 5 more minutes left.
4 minutes?
5 more minutes.
Yeah.
Okay. He does say in the film that he was not very terribly happy with the films that he had made here. He didn't feel that they were really that interesting. They're, you know, they're just kind of one-dimensional. And one could also similarly say that when encountering the theme of Messiah Complex, in which he says, I'm basically somewhat like, I compare myself on some level to Yeshua of Nazareth and to Malcolm X, the first reaction most people have, I presume, is, what a strutting egotist. Calm down, man. But then if you get beyond that and say, well, he's really alluding to transformation, to transcendence, and he feels that he's undergone this thing and he wants to, you know, convey where the new place is, that's interesting. That's really interesting. But I'm fascinated.
It is interesting because these people seem so out of our reach, right?
Right.
But if you really break it down, like, Jesus was a carpenter, you know?
Yeah.
And Gandhi was just a guy, as John Rogers says, he just had more money and a bigger ego than a lot of people who were doing that at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like Russell says, you can, you know, start something, but then millions of people need to come behind you.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just a really interesting, you know, it's just my favorite kind of film to make, Jeffrey, where you're telling one story deeply, deeply, you know, deep in it.
Right.
And which I was managed to do with Russell. I managed to get in there, you know, which is not easy, actually, I got to say. It was my biggest challenge, like the biggest kind of, you've seen the kind of people I've filmed before, and they're not easy.
Yeah.
So but he was by far the most difficult, but probably because he was famous first, you know. But
so,
I love the kind of story where all the things that come up, looking at what does it take to become a true hero? What does it take to start a movement?
Mm-hmm.
Should we be aligning? Should we? You know, I was just answering another journalist's questions, and he was saying, I thought it was so obnoxious when he compared himself to Che and Gandhi and all of that. I was so turned off. And I said, but yeah, but however you know, do you think that's, and then he said, do you think that's important to compare yours, you know, to have that kind of, and I said, I don't know if it's important. I don't know if everybody's process in making an internal switch in their lives needs to start with, I want to be like this person, you know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, Russell made a joke out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every person that he compared himself to in that show, he was comparing himself on the most base level, you know, like the Jesus one, and he's the second coming, you know, referring to being in bed with a woman, you know?
Yeah.
Or, you know, or Malcolm X, like raising his hand in a single hand gesture, you know, he's talking about wanking off in public, you know what I mean? It's, he's not saying that, but at the same time, he's trying on, he's swimming in that material because he's thinking, I'm going to maybe do something here.
Right.
Maybe I should try to become the Russell Brand version of someone who makes that kind of switch and literally dedicates their lives to a movement, is ready to throw themselves down for martyrdom and to become a martyr for an entire movement of people that needs to happen right now.
Right.
And we all know that our world is in a very precarious state right now, and that the oligarchy that is our government is really not addressing, and in fact is maybe moving us in the opposite direction from some serious and vital changes we need to make right now.
Sure. Yeah.
We all know that, right?
Are you a fan?
Most of us know that.
Right.
But who's doing, what are we doing about it? You know, it's kind of refreshing to see someone break out of all that. He could be making millions on movies right now, you know?
Mm.
But he's not doing that. He's on YouTube with a news show.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And marching in the streets. Like, so whatever's behind it, whether it is a quest for immortality on some level, whether there is a desire for lasting and you know, impervious fame, it's still it's still, I think, very inspirational at the same time.
I agree. I'm a fan of No Direction Home, Martin Scorsese's doc about Dylan, and I think that your film is...
That one was long, too.
Yeah. That was like, what was that, 3 or 4 hours?
It was longer than mine. Right.
Yeah, and so basically, yeah, you're pretty efficient. The only thing that I just, as I said, is that as much of a fan as I just wish there was a little bit less of the crazy narcissism stuff, a little bit more of the transcendent political, spiritual stuff that happened since 12 or 13. But I'm fascinated to hear from you that there are some who've actually said to you, no, I wanted to see the narcissistic, crazy stuff. That's hilarious to me. But anyway, it takes all sorts to make the world, right?
Yeah. I like that film a lot too.
Yeah. All right. Well, I hope you guys have a great time at in Austin. When are you leaving? On tomorrow or the next day, or when are you going down there?
Thursday. I have a short film there too the next day premiering. And I've got my talk show that I'm hosting in town, BYOD, and I've got a platform I'm launching on atotaldisruption.com.
I'm afraid I don't know about BYOD, Andy. How can I hear that?
BYOD is Bring Your Own Doc. Do you know that show?
I guess I don't. Sorry.
Oh, man. Check it out. Go to thelip.tv, or actually just search BYOD, Andy, and you'll find it. But it's thelip.tv, Bring Your Own Doc.
Okay.
BYOD, Bring Your Own Doc.
Right.
It's a show that I've been doing for 4 years, hosting and producing, and it's a talk show. It's the only talk show about documentary in the world, and many of the greatest documentary films and filmmakers are on the show. Oscar roundtables. We do coverage of Sundance and South By. We have a studio. The Lip has a studio in Beverly Hills, and for many filmmakers, they've been taking the shows and putting them on their DVD releases and stuff, because we get into such great dialogue,
right,
you know,
right.
If you watch, because it's filmmaker to filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
And it really keeps me on my toes, and it keeps me out of being egocentric, in my spaceship, just focused on my own work, head down, you know. I think so many of us filmmakers are, especially in documentary, working so hard and so overwhelmed that we don't actually have a chance to see everybody's work and look around us. And so luckily... I have that, I'm charged with that responsibility, and every week, so we've done well over 200 episodes and covered over 300 films. You should check it out. It's like...
Thanks for telling me about it. I'm sorry for not being more...
...interview on there.
Yeah, okay.
Les Blank, a two-parter with D.A. Pennybaker, and Al and I were trying to do one, but he kept getting sick. He was sick when I would be in New York the few times we had it scheduled, and unfortunately we didn't capture...
Yeah.
Al's brilliance on camera before he passed away, but
yeah, that's very.
We do have D.A. Pennybaker in a two-part, and Les Blank's last interview, and some really great ones. Like the guys from Undefeated, the day after they got the Oscar, Waiting for Vivian Maier. That's a great interview.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot of really good ones.
So I'll find it, and I'll put a whole link to it in the piece that I run on Friday. So.